Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Wednesday. Today, we're going to talk with Dan Weber, USCFootball.com beat writer and columnist, about the final practice of Howard Jones Field. Crazy for this 2017 season. We're going to talk a little bit about early signing period, which has been going on this morning, and answer your questions about the team as the Trojans prepare for the Cotton Bowl, taking on Ohio State. As you can hear, I'm a little bit under the weather, so I apologize for that, but we'll try to get through this and get to all your questions and do all we can to answer them to the best of our ability, let you guys know what's going on with USC, not only just signing day stuff, but of course, the bowl practices. So let's bring in Dan Weber. What's up, Dan? How you doing, man?
Doing good. Here in the kind of the middle of the day on early signing day, getting ready to head into USC and see how this all plays out. It's a whole new kind of a whole new world, new scenario, new practice schedules and time on and time off and all of that. This is kind of an in-between week. Last week they put in the whole game plan for the Cotton Bowl in Ohio State. Next week they'll be in Dallas and they'll, you know, really go into a game week situation. This week's kind of hanging there in the middle, where you know they practice Monday and Tuesday. Going to let them off for some pre-Christmas, you know, heading home, flying to Dallas, and then so this week, and then you got early signing day right in the middle of it. So this is kind of a different sort of week that we haven't exactly seen before.
Yeah, this is, everything's kind of new this week, and no one really knew exactly what to expect with the early signing period, and you know there'll probably be some adjustments afterwards, but you're seeing flips, you're seeing decommitments. It's just kind of accelerated the process, and we don't know what it's going to mean for the February signing day. We don't know what it's going to mean for all the programs. I mean, there could be, I think there'll be guys that are like flipping, or you know, guys that are like three-star dudes that would have been like a second or a B choice or something for a major program that ends up signing with like a San Jose State or something. And now they're off the table. And so if you're one of those three-star guys that, you know, didn't sign, you might be a lot more popular come February because there's fewer of you to go around. And so if USC and UCLA both need like a linebacker and it's some guy that's a, you know, some three-star that was, you know, looking at Boise State or something, now you might be a hot commodity because there's just not a lot of B options out there if you miss on someone that's like a big time name.
Well, I think what we're finding is it's doing two things. It's speeding things up in one way. So, you know, there may be, you know, some who say I better sign now. And then I think for some kids, it's slowing things down and they're saying, you know, I'm really going to wait till February now. So I think you're getting a little bit of both. I mean, it's just, you know, which is why it's sort of discombobulating. You know, you're speeding it up at the one end and slowing it down at the other end, yeah. And it's all happening at the same time in the middle of a bowl practice week. So I don't think anybody knows how to play it exactly. It's just like, well, let's see. And Clay, unlike some coaches, Clay's more of the glasses half full guy, rather than, you know, the glasses is like, you know, like a Nick Saban who would just come right out and say, yeah, this is horrible.
Right.
We don't like this. I don't have any control of anything that's going on. And that's not what Clay's going to do. So Clay's basically saying, we're going to just try to do it the best we can and see what we can do.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it turns out. So Dan will be, I'm not well enough to go to campus right now, but Dan will be down at campus today, Wednesday at 3 p.m. There'll be a press conference with Clay Helton. So he'll give you all the latest stuff, what's going on from there. And I believe Shotgun and Keeley are going to plan on doing some sort of Facebook Live from there too. So if you get to listen to this before then, stay tuned for that. Before we jump in and talk about the team, I wanted to thank our sponsor, Trader Joe's. They've actually been helping me out this week with I'm making green tea, and I looked at, oh, this is from Trader Joe's, and they're like, my wife is like, put honey in it, and I'm like, okay, we have this honey from Trader Joe's, so we're using these little Trader Joe's things, and I got some chicken soup from Trader Joe's, so they've been great to us over the past few months, and we really appreciate them being a part of us and part of this podcast. It's their 50th anniversary this year, which is crazy, and we had a brand new one. The one I go to is in Hermosa Beach. It just opened, and of course, USC has a really cool one at the at University Village. Awesome location. So I know a lot of people talk to me about stopping in there and picking up stuff for tailgating and everything. So I think that worked out really well. But it's great for the students. I mean, not a lot of, you don't have a lot of college campuses. You have a Trader Joe's there. So pretty cool stuff. But thanks to Trader Joe's. You know, great, good stuff. They've been helping me out this week with my little flu thing or whatever, but we love Trader Joe's. I know you're a big Trader Joe's fan too, Dan.
I stopped in yesterday, actually, at the one at USC, and they were really helpful. They did find me my holiday corn pudding.
Okay.
So I was very pleased about that. They couldn't have been more helpful, and everybody remembered that we had done the show there and all that, so that was a fun little stop off after morning practice. That was one of the good things about having morning practice yesterday, and some time to stop in at Trader Joe's. So, thank you very much, Trader Joe's.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I want to talk about. I made it to the Monday practice. I didn't make it to Tuesday morning's practice, but that was the last. I was going to say Trader Joe's practice. I have sick brain, so I apologize if I say some stupid stuff. That's the last USC practice on their home turf at Howard Jones Field. So the last time there were some jersey switches and stuff going on. So maybe kind of give people an update of you know, kind of what went on. And it's the last time we're going to see USC practice here on campus for this season.
It was weird. It just doesn't. And maybe some of it's the weather and some of it's the days of the week and all of that kind of thing. It just didn't seem like the last day. It's like it just snuck up on us so quickly. And, you know, maybe part of that was the 12 straight, you know, games and no time off. And you just got into this habit. And then we've had some time off before the championship game and before now the Cotton Bowl. And it just didn't seem like yesterday was the last day. One of the things, because it was a morning practice, that they were getting the guys on the road that were, you know, out of town or, you know, getting a little more time. Like, they didn't wear their high school jerseys, which had been kind of a tradition. I didn't much like the tradition, to be honest with you. But nobody was in their high school jerseys. They did do some defensive backs and the wide receivers switched numbers up, which is always difficult in those positions because they kind of are the farthest away much of the time, and a lot of the guys are very similar, you know, size and shape and all that, and so you were trying to say, now, who was that that just caught that pass, or who caught that punt, or who did he switch with, and all that kind of thing. So that got it into sort of, okay, this is a little bit of the tradition of the last day, and they did really get into it with the you know, the tunnel ushering out the seniors with the running the gauntlet and all that, and that was and there just aren't that many seniors. There are actually, I think, almost more walk-ons and scout team guys and that are graduating than actual graduates. And then the other part of that is you've got 10 underclassmen who are considering leaving for the NFL, and they're not a part of that exactly. So it was just a kind of a different last day practice on Howard Jones. It just had a different feel to it. Not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing. It was different.
What about the injuries? I know, so Jack Jones wasn't practicing the day I was there on Monday. Anyone, and you know, Valus Jones, who's not, you know, that, I don't think that's a big impact, but injury wise, it seems like the team's in a pretty good shape heading into the bowl game.
I think that's one of the things you really notice is, And one of the issues is, I think they really know the game plan for Ohio State. And they, and this is, these are, you know, if you look at the first offense or first defense, they've been together now for most of the second half of the season, and there haven't been the, you know, the shifting in and out. So you know, you have a Jack Jones, and he was not in pads, but he was active. Let's say he was moving around, and one would think he will be he'll be fine by you know, another 10 days. Let's see. I'm trying to think if there's anybody else that really looks like an issue. And we're seeing Porter Gustin, like, actually running from, you know, one part of the practice from Brian Kennedy to Howard Jones and back. And he's certainly, you know, up close and involved with what the defense is doing. So you wouldn't think he's been ruled out yet. And I would say this. He's probably legitimately closer to being able to come back than he was the previous two times he did actually come back. So he probably in better shape now. My guess would be, if you said you thought he was able to come back the previous two times, you'd be really gun shy about saying he's ready to come back now. I would think it would be a difficult process clearing the physical this time. I mean, you just can't imagine you'd allow a kid to come back the third time in the season and have that one go wrong as well. So I don't know, you know, how I feel about Porter, but otherwise you get the sense that this team is, they know who's going to be doing what and where, and you know, they feel pretty good about that at this point in time. And this is one of the things, I think they've got the game plan to the point where it's mostly review yesterday and Monday. And I think you can get maybe halfway through practice on review, and then there's just not a lot more you can do this week. I think they'll really pick it up when they get to Dallas. But this is a challenging week, I think. I think it's one of the reasons when Pete was here, they basically had practices like this for the scout team and the walk-ons, and all the guys that don't get to do as much during the year would go out and scrimmage, and, you know, it'd be a lot about them, and the other, you know, the kids that do play kind of be rooting them on and that kind of thing. Well, this staff has chosen not to do that. So it's a little bit more of a challenge, I think, getting through practice this week.
Yeah, and then you know, they get some time off pre-Christmas break, I guess, and then heading down to Dallas, and Dan will be down there. You're getting there. They're going to practice on Christmas Day, right? Later to practice then?
Right, yeah. And on the first day, actually, they're going to practice. They get there Friday. Then they're going to practice on Christmas Eve, and I was going to go for that, and then they decided USC would close their Christmas Eve practice, so I said, okay, I'm not going for that. So I mentioned that to Clay yesterday, and he said, you aren't missing anything. It's going to be like a Monday walkthrough. So it's really not going to be a practice. So I said, okay, so we'll get to see them, you know, the first time they have. And they're just doing what the bowls allow you to do, which is just 15 minutes, because so many of these teams don't allow you even 15 minutes open. So the compromise in all the bowl games, all the big January bowl games, or the January 6th games, is that they have the 15 minutes at the start of practice open. So you can see who's there, who looks like they're healthy, that kind of thing. I mean, you're not going to get to see the whole practice, but we will be there starting Sunday.
All right. Well, let's jump into some of these questions. We got one from Tarek. Of the freshmen who have not played or have played seldomly, who could you see making an impact for 2018?
Well, I mean, I think you start off with the injured kid. You know, I think you start off with Greg Johnson and Isaiah Palamalu. I mean, I just think you look at those two guys, and they're big and they're athletic. They're just getting back a little bit right now, but I think they're they're impacting probably this recruiting class a little bit, just because I think they think they're going to be so, you know, so strong, so deep at safety, because you're looking at those two, and then I'll say two more injured guys that are, you know, that I consider freshmen, Taylor Katoa and Hunter Echols. So, you know, at practice now, we see those guys out there, and I don't know, we could call Marlon to a Pulitu, who's going to get a medical red shirt for this year, and he's now starting to filter his way back out onto the practice field and after his back surgery. So that's five freshmen who aren't going to be exactly freshmen next year, but I think have some real real potential. And depending on what happens with Sam, Jack Sears, you know, has to be you know, a major factor. You know, if Sam leaves, they've got at this point just two scholarship quarterbacks. So so that's a big factor. And then after that, I think we'll let them play into a position of contributing, but I think, you know, they've got a nice head start with if you take those five, six guys who will still be able to be classified as freshmen next year, that's a big boost to this recruiting class.
Yeah, no, I think it definitely could be. It's how those freshmen, you know, how they're projected. I think it impacts how this recruiting class is going to be, the early signing period. It's all kind of, and then of course when players leave, so it's all kind of wrapped in, and it's a juggling act that Clay Helton and the staff have to continue to play with. Tarek also wants to know, do you see any of the USC players being coaches in their future?
That's a good question. Let's see.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of who would
be. Cameron Smith.
Yeah, I could see Cameron Smith.
Is a coach right now.
Chris Hawkins. I could see Chris Hawkins.
Chris could. Yep. Yeah. I mean, they have, there are some, you know, clear, you know, leader types, and I mean, those would be the first two you would think about. I don't think there's any question that those two just jump off the page as far as coaches. I guess Tua Lovendon, his family, he's got a history, you know, a family kind of coaching tree, and he wouldn't be a shocker. Nico Fowler, yeah. I mean, these are guys, I think they can do a lot of different things with their lives, but if they chose to, I think they absolutely could be. Steven Mitchell, I think, you know, could go that direction, but, you know, he's already got his master's, I guess, and so I'm not sure if he'll, you know, choose to go into coaching, but there are some candidates. I don't think there's any question about that.
Mitchell's looked really good in practice lately. They're really sharp.
Yeah.
So that'd be interesting to see.
Yeah, I mean, he just he's had the kind of year you couldn't have ever imagined that he was going to have after the two major knee surgeries, and just, you know, it was that he's rounded in the shape the way he has, and it just keeps getting better. Now, the nice thing about, I guess, if you've had injuries, is you don't have as much wear and tear in your body, and he looks really fresh. He just looks like, you know, you wouldn't be surprised at whatever he does right now, because he just he's strong and fresh legged and just, you know, and he's had plenty of experience. It just hadn't, other than the knee, you know, surgeries, and he hasn't had that much, you know, banging around. So he may have been as pleasant a surprise as anything that's happened with this team this year.
Let's see. We're going to go to Otis. He said, "Hey, Ryan and Dan, what is the payout significance of bowl games, and how much did USC miss out on not playing on the December 29th Fiesta Bowl?" Well, I think he's reversed that. Cotton Bowl versus the Fiesta Bowl. The Cotton Bowl is actually December 29th, and the Fiesta is December 30th. How much did they miss out on not making the playoffs? Otis. I don't know if you have.
Yeah, I don't think there's any difference significant between a Cotton and a Fiesta Bowl. And it's not a USC difference that much because it's for the conference. I mean, and I think it's something around another $7 million. Boy, that's just off the top of my head. If you make the playoffs, and I don't know why that number is there. It's a number like that. But then basically you're sharing that with, you know, Oregon State missed out on playoff money because USC didn't get there, you could say, because they share it. You know, the money doesn't just go to USC. Now, I don't know if they give you a little more money for your band. And you know who actually gets hurt is if you go to the playoffs, all the players' parents get paid, get airfare and hotels so that you can pay for all the players' parents to go to the playoff, the two playoff games, or the three, actually, you know, the championship game. And that does not apply to the bowl games. Now, it doesn't seem all that completely fair, but it's obvious you couldn't do that, you know, at the Cherubundi, you know, Boca Raton Bowl last night. But that's one place that you do miss out. Parents have to get there on their own to the bowl game. But it's enough money that it probably matters a little bit. But the way you split it up in conferences, it doesn't matter so much unless you're Notre Dame. It doesn't matter so much. So Notre Dame, for example, now they cost themselves a lot of money by not making the playoffs because they just keep it all and, you know, ending up where they did. And I don't know what the payout is for Notre Dame's bowl, but it's a whole lot less than making the playoffs.
Yeah, that's pretty serious. People worry about, like, the bowl payouts and stuff a lot of times. But, yeah, the Cotton versus Fiesta, there's not – that wasn't performance-based. That was just a selection. But yeah, I don't know why people seem to worry about that a whole lot. But like Dan said, the only significant thing would have been making the playoffs. It's more the school would bring in more, and it would be better for the conference, you know. So kind of a weird thing. Hey, before we jump into the rest of the questions, I want to talk to everybody about SeatGeek, because buying tickets to a sporting event can be very complicated and confusing. There is a better way to buy using SeatGeek. So I have the app on my phone. Actually did some holiday shopping on that. So if you have something, you know, you're not really sure of a family member or a friend or something that you don't know what to get them, you can get them tickets. And you can do that on SeatGeek. If you download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code USC, that's promo code USC, you're going to get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. So if you want to find some kind of last minute deal, you want to plan a night out, if you a perfect gift like we talked about before, SeatGeek's going to help you get the best seats at the best prices, and the whole thing is fully guaranteed. So, and I know you like seeing the Trojans in person. You wouldn't be listening to this podcast otherwise. SeatGeek can help you get closer to the action, and it's a great value, so check it out. It'll save you time. It'll save you money. It searches multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals, and you're going to get the most bang for your buck because it'll grade every ticket based on the value to help you maintain and identify the best seats that'll fit whatever your budget is. And you can use it like for your own purposes, like I said, or as a gift. So like I said, download SeatGeek, the app, on your phone. Enter promo code USC. That's promo code USC, and you will get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. So you actually get a discount on your gift. So I don't know if you need to do any last-minute shopping, Dan, but you can use SeatGeek if you'd like.
That's a good idea. You're right. I do. I just like to go on there and browse to see what tickets would cost at various games and what kind of tickets are available. It's just kind of an interesting browsing situation to see who's got what, and if you wanted to go, what would it cost and all that. And I would advise people just do that and enjoy kind of, if I wanted to go to this game, could I? And you know, are the tickets available? And where would I have to sit? And all that kind of thing. I think you'll find it interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. You know, you might not want to go to a game, or like there's an NFL game or something. I've done that too. For like, I want to kind of go to this Rams, Eagles game. I ended up going, but I was thinking about doing that. I use SeatGeek to kind of check to see what I could get. So cool stuff there. All right, well, let's roll on with the. We still got a few more questions. Paul in Las Vegas, his question's about guys who can transfer in and play immediately. So he says the quarterback mystery has me wondering if that's the route we're going, since there's not a lot of qualified homeschoolers left. So any college player who has graduated is eligible to transfer and play with however much eligibility is left on his status. Question. Technically, a player could have 2 years to play if he redshirted and graduated in three. Paul in Vegas. And I, real quick, yeah, so the name that was out there for the transfer is Shea Patterson. So that was the guy that USC recruited heavily out of high school with Steve Sarkisian, but then they also were recruiting KJ Costello, and they kind of sort of tried to get both of them and didn't get either of them. KJ Costello ends up at Stanford. You got to see him play, especially more towards the end of the year. Shea Patterson, I thought, did a really good job the last 2 years, kind of thrown into action last year as a true freshman at Ole Miss. They have the heavy sanctions handed down, so he's now transferred to Michigan. So I don't think there's a transfer really on the radar, but the transfer rumor or the thought that a transfer could come in, that was all Shea Patterson, and he ended up going there. But yeah, we've saw, like, you know, Max Brown transferred out. He had 1 year left to play, but if you graduate in 3 years and transfer and you still have 2 years of eligibility, you could play 2 years. USC got like a tight end or something, right, Dan, that did that? The guy from Oklahoma? Why am I blanking?
From Oklahoma. The starting tight end last year, whose name totally escapes me
it's
now.
It's mine, but, too.
USC isn't... he's not here this year, but he graduated in 3 years, and was kind of a solid blocker and goal line pass receiver, what have you, and that's the kind of and he was a Southern California kid, so I'm gonna come up with his name and it would kill him.
Taylor McNamara.
Oh yeah, Taylor.
Yeah.
Tyler.
Oh.
I'm trying to think.
No, I think no, it's...
I'm just...
Was it Taylor?
Completely. It's just how you get caught up in 1 year and you don't think about about last year. But a really good kid. You could see why he graduated in 3 years at Oklahoma and didn't see the future of being a tight end at Oklahoma, where they don't necessarily throw the ball to tight end. And is there a guy out there like that? I think right now you might not even know that there's a guy available. The guy, may not have even decided yet that might be playing in a bowl game, might be keeping it quiet. Maybe there is that guy out there. And they're going to wait and see what Sam does. I don't think there's any question. But when Sam makes his decision, if he's coming back, you would think, that would be no place for somebody to transfer in. If he's not, it might be attractive to somebody, to think that they'd certainly have to get here, you would think, in the spring and compete. And it still might not be that attractive to somebody to think, well, will I beat out, both Matt Fink and Jack Sears and as Max Brown said. It's not obvious what's going to happen, at your new school. So, I don't think it's impossible that scenario exists. It's just I don't think we know what that scenario is. And I do think there's maybe a high school mystery quarterback out there that, because of certain circumstances, could be, waiting in the wings to see how this all plays out.
Yeah, there's a lot of factors here at play. So, but I don't think the main transfer was Shea Patterson, and that's not happening. But this is.
I think he went. I think he made the right call.
Yeah,
they need a quarterback. Michigan badly. They've kind of whiffed the last few years, and it's something that Harbaugh's getting a lot of criticism for. It's like for this, we pay a coach $10 million, and we pay four assistants well over $1 million, and we can't get a quarterback. Let's maybe go get a quarterback, instead of paying all the coaches all this money. So, yeah, they're feeling a little heat. I think they needed to get Jay Patterson, and I think it was a good move for him.
This is an interesting one from Earl in West L.A., Dan, and maybe that's something you can actually ask Clay Helton about at the press conference today. But he said, how will the 2018 scholarships offered to Chase McGrath and Reed Butterwich be counted, and how many scholarships will remain for next year? Without the specific, you know, how many are remaining, all that stuff. Like, we don't need to get into all that, but the giving those two guys a scholarship, is that taking two away from this class that they could have? Does it mean that the guys that are already on scholarship, the kickers, are going to transfer out of the program? Like, what do you kind of think is going on there?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. These are two scholarships that are not available for this class. I mean, they're gone now. These are, because those are two initial grants. And let's see. Well, you know what? I guess the more, let me think about this. Reed is a player who's been in the program for, you know, he's a senior, 4-year guy. So I think he could get a scholarship and maybe not be counted against the initial class, if I'm trying to read that right. Wasn't it? It was 2 years. If you scholarship the player within 2 years of his being in the program, he counted as an initial grant. Budrovich may not count as an initial grant.
That's a good point.
I think that's the way that goes. McGrath would have to count as an initial grant coming right out of high school at Modern Day last year. So I think it might be one and one. I think one will count against the class, one will not. And Reed would probably replace, and we don't know exactly of the walk-ons who have been scholarship. I would guess Matt Lopes, this is his last year for sure. So he's a walk-on whose scholarship Reed Buderich could take. And and that wouldn't change the numbers for this coming in, this class coming in, but McGrath has to be counted in this class coming in. But that's a good question. We'll ask if Clay can get really specific on those numbers, or as much as he can. And some of it you can't possibly know how it's necessarily going to play out in terms. Because I mean, the hard part is you're trying to. And this may impact the early signing day, late signing day. On January 15th, you will know who of the 10 USC players with junior eligibility are coming back and who are going. And so that is going to impact maybe how you finish out your class in terms of who leaves and who stays. So there's a lot of moving pieces.
Yeah.
As far as this puzzle is concerned, more so than we've seen in the past. And, you know, with 10 players who, you know, Clay will say all 10 have a legitimate reason to consider going. I'm not sure I agree with that. But the 10 are going to be in the process. You really got to have some contingency plan. Now, the first contingency plan USC has is those 6 players who are going to be coming off of redshirt years who were injured. I mean, that's a big part of next year's class, however you want to describe it. And they're going to be farther along than any recruiting class. So USC, that's like having, you know, money in the bank there with those guys. But we really have to see what the 10, who comes back and what positions they play, who leaves. What positions they, you know, you got to fill in, and you know, there's no way we can know that until, you know, January 15th rolls around.
Yeah, we just won't know. So many balls up in the air, lots of juggling going on, and it's harder and harder on these coaches to do all this in this early signing period. Certainly, can complicate things a little bit. So we'll see how that.
It makes you wonder. If it's not going to hurt 3-star kids, I mean, it's just, do you take the leap on a 3-star kid now, unless he's somebody you just are so sure about that he's been sort of passed over for whatever reason? But But you would think it would be hard knowing that there are so many considerations and possibilities and ways that this might go, that it might be hard to pull the trigger in the early signing period. I mean, just, you know, who do you send out the letters of intent to based on the fact that you don't know how it's going to play out in another, 4 weeks? It's not easy.
No, it's not. You just don't know how it's going to play out. All right, we got a couple more. One, Ian in Hawaii. He said, I wanted to get your view of USC's chances in the Cotton Bowl. Objectively speaking, based on this season's performance, I think there's a 60% chance that the Ohio State University wins in a blowout a la Notre Dame. I think USC's penchant for turnovers, penalties, and poor play calling severely sink them. We can get away with that against Colorado or UCLA, but not for not with the Buckeyes. Conversely, I see a 40% chance of a close victory a la the Rose Bowl against Penn State. Darnold is a magic man and might be enough to pull out another cardiac arrest victory. The factors that affect my analysis, however, are injuries, referees, and players choosing not to play. Are we healthier now to the point that using prior games as case studies is a moot point? If we don't have incompetent Pac-12 refs, will that help us? Are there any notable players on either team who might not play a la Christian McCaffrey? Thanks so much, and thanks for your analysis and down-to-earth observations. Ian in Hawaii.
Well, okay. I do think the previous games are a little bit moot. I do think this team looks a little different, having the 3 weeks to get ready, and having coaches who have a feel, I think, more for what they can do and what they should do. Well, you know, will they do it? Will they be able to do it? I don't know. I mean, let's face it, beating Stanford twice is tough. I think Stanford was better than any team, say, Alabama played this year. I really believe that. Or you could say, well, they weren't better than Auburn. Yeah, well, Auburn beat them. You know, so I think, you know, it should have been a wider margin at the Stanford game, no question about it. Dumb penalties and dumb plays, also some big toughness, and just things like letting the ball roll on punts or catching the punts and that. And have they changed that? No, I don't think so. You're still going to have to endure what's going to happen when Ohio State punts to you. However, I do think the defense is better than the statistics show. I think they're closer to that team at the goal line against Stanford than they are the team that's 76th or whatever in total defense. So I think there's more of a chance that maybe Ohio State, if you read any of their message boards, their fans just are taking USC for granted. And it's hard. I don't care how good a coach you are. It's hard if that's all these kids hear for 3 weeks, that, man, you're just going to line up, blow them off the ball, and just life is going to be good. We're going to run the ball down their throat and throw the ball deep and da-da-da-da-da. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen to the extent they think it's going to happen. So I think USC has a chance to show up. I mean, it surprises me that Ohio State fans, and I don't know that fans have a lot of control, but they have some. They set the atmospherics for how Ohio State practices and gets ready for this game. And I'm thinking, if you're a fan base and your team hasn't beat the other team since 1973 in seven games, all of which were really important games, I'm not sure I'd feel all that overconfident. But Ohio State's Ohio State. You know, they've got the second-best roster in the country as far as recruiting. And USC's got the third. So it's not like, you know, they're playing Northwestern or somebody who maybe could sneak up on them. They shouldn't be surprised about USC. But I think USC will score the ball on Ohio State. I don't think there's any doubt. I think their offense is in a pretty good place right now. Obviously, without the Pac-12 officials, you probably have a better chance if you're USC, considering you're the 127th team in the country out of 129 in penalties. Anybody would be better, you know. So so I probably like that. If the USC defense shows up, I mean, and they've got enough talent. I mean, let's say, okay, it'd be nice to have, you know, Marlon. It'd be nice to have Porter Gustin. But there's enough talent. If they didn't have any blown coverages, for example, against Stanford, they just let Stanford catch the ball, even when they were double-teaming them and in good position. You know, they've got to get better at that. The deep coverage just has to be able to play the ball better. And Ohio State does like to throw the ball deep because you have to pay attention to Barrett and the two tailbacks. And so when they throw it, they tend to really throw it deep. So that they've got to stay in the game. But I think your 60% chance of Ohio State blowout is, I think, is way, 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 way high. I think these teams are really close. And they're close in kind of how they played the season. I know people say, Ohio State's defense is way better. Well, USC's given up like 26 points a game against much better offenses than Ohio State's played. And they've, you know, they're like in the top 15 defenses, and they've given up like 19.9 points. But they're playing a lot of really bad offenses. USC, I think Clay made the point the other day. He said, we play, you know, there are nine Pac-12 teams in bowls. And he said, all nine of them are really good offenses and have good quarterbacks. And he said, they're going to make you look, you know, a little worse. So I don't know that the margin, but you know, in terms of defense, is all that great between these two teams. So I'm fairly optimistic that this will be a good, that USC will play a good game. I mean, I guess they could not show up the way they did at Notre Dame. I guess that's the longest of long shot possibility. I mean, that's the most discouraging point of the entire year, that they didn't get it, that Notre Dame game was a really big deal. And I know injuries and Notre Dame having a bye and USC, you know, sticking it right in the middle of the schedule and all that kind of thing. I know all the excuses, but they weren't prepared. The coaches didn't do a good job preparing them. They didn't do a good job preparing themselves. They got themselves in a 21-0 hole, and there was nothing they could do, and they kind of just bowed out and said, go ahead and stomp us, and let's get out of here. That was embarrassing. Ohio State's got one of those, too, and theirs was to Iowa, a team not nearly as good as Notre Dame. So, you know, I don't know, you know, if you want to balance out the most embarrassing loss between these two. I mean, the more embarrassing loss, anyway, I'd probably give it to Ohio State. So, you know, we'll see. But I would not. And I would say there's as much chance of USC blowing out Ohio State as Ohio State blowing out USC. Maybe more. I mean, USC might have the ability to put up more points on Ohio State than Ohio State does on USC. We'll see, but that's my take. I think this is a game. I do agree with all the pundits that this is a really good game to watch because it matters. It matters to Ohio State. I mean, they will. I'm sure Urban Meyer will point this out a few times that they haven't beaten, again, as I said, they haven't beaten USC since 1973. I would think that would be a kind of a thing that Ohio State wouldn't really like to have hanging over their heads. So they're going to, you know, now the question is, do they have enough respect for USC, or do they think USC is the team that showed up in South Bend? If they do, maybe it'll be difficult for them to get to where they need to get to be able to, you know, really put one on USC. But I don't think there's any question that USC understands what Ohio State is capable of and what this game means. This is not the Notre Dame game. It's still mind-boggling that USC didn't understand that about Notre Dame, but they understand it about Ohio State. I don't think this is not a Wisconsin game from the Holiday Bowl where USC, you know, didn't practice, didn't get ready for a physical team, didn't have that much respect for Wisconsin's talent, and played bad, still probably should have won the game. So we'll see. It's a Big Ten team, and you know, the Big Ten hasn't been that impressive, and has, you know, very often not been impressive against USC.
We shall see. We're looking forward to that one for sure. We got one last one for you, Dan. Robin in Virginia, he said, if you do another podcast before the Cotton Bowl, well, we are, Robin, could you please follow up with Dan on why Larry Scott would rather have parity than excellence? He'd rather handicap the best teams and have them all be just good than a couple that are great. USC runs the Pac-12. They make all the money from national championships and Rose Bowls. Then they have to split it evenly with the bottom feeders like Cal, Oregon State, and Colorado. USC's unhappy, so they leave. The conference just lost their most successful and powerful team. So what does Larry Scott do now, other than he gets his parity? Robin in Virginia.
Well, I don't think he's ever considered, or anybody in the Pac-12 has ever considered, that USC would do anything. USC doesn't even say boo about any of this. They haven't said boo. They haven't rocked the boat. I mean, they get scheduled that Washington State Friday night game, you know, second time in 2 years where, you know, they have to start the season off as the Friday night team, the road team, after traveling the week before. They don't say boo. They should say boo. And they should scare them to death. But if you're Larry Scott, you can count. There's 12 teams in the Pac-12, and you'd like to have everybody gets a vote. And if you want to get your $4 million plus a year, 4.2 plus a, what, almost $2 million loan for his house that you'd like to be renewed, which it just was, you like to say to all the rest of them that, boy, I brought you all up, and as a bonus, I brought USC down, or something to that effect, not in those many words, but I don't think it hurts Larry in the Pac-12 scheme of things that they don't have anybody competing for a national championship. Now, he got religion the day of the Pac-12 championship and tried to make the case for USC, but if you're in the any of the other conferences, basically, I mean, I think the Big Ten was really hurt by the fact that they didn't get anybody in there, but if you're the SEC commissioner, I mean, look at what a good job he did. They've got parity in the SEC. Nobody's that good. And a lot of them are pretty darn bad. And they still got two of the four playoff teams. So, you know, that's one of their priorities, is getting people. They set up the BCS, SEC did, former commissioner and football coach at Vanderbilt, Roy Kramer, and figured out how they could game the BCS. And then they've taken that right over to, I mean, what other conference cheers, you know, SEC? You know, they've got a whole different view about it, and they think it makes the rest of the schools in the SEC, even the ones, you know, the bad programs, they feel good about themselves if Alabama wins another national championship, or Auburn does, or whoever, Georgia this year, where in the Pac-12, USC wins a national championship. Do you think any of those schools are going to be cheering, you know, Pac-12, Pac-12? No, they could care less. They'd rather USC go down in flames. And that's just, it's a different mindset out here, and Larry Scott picked up on that. He came in when USC was, you know, getting hit with the sanctions, and he realized, this is my chance. Parity is possible now. It's no longer, the first thing he ever said almost at a Pac-12 media day was, you know, no more the Pac-10 then, Pac-10 and Pac-9 and USC and the Nine Dwarfs or whatever that was. It was clear. He gave the message that I'm going to help everybody else. USC's on its own. And USC said, well, okay, that's fine. Just give us the weekender and we'll be happy. Just, you know, we don't care. We're USC. We just do what we do. And that's gone till this day, and why Ryan is so right when he says that USC has to start considering all their options, and there are a ton of them, unbelievable number of things that USC should be considering right now, and should make it pretty clear that they're considering all of these possibilities, some of which would not include the Pac-12. And let it be known that you may have to go on your own, and, you know, you'll be closer to the Mountain West. I mean, and maybe USC even considers taking UCLA with it and the two together. I mean, if you ever see UCLA try to strike their own Notre Dame kind of deal with one of the major networks, the Pac-12 does become closer to the Mountain West then, and would, I think, almost be willing to do whatever it took to keep LA in the conference. And that alone should strike just unbelievable fear into the other 10. It's easy now for them to, you know, say, you guys aren't going to do anything, so what? But and the whole idea of, if you're Larry Scott and somebody says, what about parity? He should say, that's foolish. You can never have parity between USC and Oregon State. Never. Maybe in baseball. Maybe in, you know, women's basketball, if USC doesn't get their act together. But that's not possible. You know, you've got the three winningest NCAA programs of all time, all with more than 100 national championships in USC, UCLA, and Stanford. And I thought it was interesting. People want to bash Bill Walton, but on the USC-Princeton game last night, he actually said, and consider this is coming from a UCLA guy, he said that if USC was allowed to count all their non-NCAA national championships, and he didn't even mention those early women's basketball championships when they were basically the women's program nationally, or the football championships, he said USC would be number one ahead of Stanford and UCLA. But to say that a conference that has those three programs in it can ever have any kind of real parity is a joke. It can't. There's not parity, and there's not going to be parity. You can't change history, and you can't change the fact that two of them are in Los Angeles. I mean, there's just, you know, all those schools come to Los Angeles to recruit, you know, half their teams. So so the whole parity thing is pretty silly, and it's going to play out, and by the next TV contracts, there's not going to be parity. And you're just kidding yourself if you think there is, but no parity. He has to say that, I guess, right now to keep the other, you know, schools kind of pacified, but parity is an illusion, and it's not going to be the way college football is, especially, and college athletic programs are going to be in the future.
All right. Well, that's Dan Weber giving you all his thoughts on this USC Trojan football team and, of course, the Pac-12. We always love to take little shots at the Pac-12. Dan, thanks so much for coming on.
By the way, the Pac-12 is starting a series. I'll give them this. This is a good idea. And where would they have heard this, Ryan? They're doing a serious radio satellite show about the Pac-12. They haven't said who's going to do it, how they're going to do it. They're just saying that in next year they're going to come up with, and they wouldn't even say, you know, as we've discussed, a Paul Feinbaum type show and all that. But of course they need one, something like that. But it's taken them a while. They missed this football season when they could have done it. But they're actually going to do, without getting into real specifics at all, but they decided that might be a good idea. Yeah, it might be a good idea. Just do it.
Who's been saying that?
Instead of talking about it. Huh?
Yeah, who's been saying that?
Yeah, right. I'm saying, yeah.
You've been on it, Dan.
And I communicated with them, sent them, you know, what we've written about it, how we've talked about it, and they thanked me and all of that. But, you know, I just would have jumped on it. You've got a network. I mean, you can put it on, like the SEC network puts Paul Feinbaum on 3 hours a day. How hard is that? He comes into the studio, you turn on a camera. You know, it's not that difficult. They could have done it for this year. They put 800 volleyball games on and, you know, water polo and all that kind of stuff. It couldn't have been easier. But next year they're going to do it. So we'll see. They haven't said, you know, who might do it, how they would do it, just that they're going to do it. So, and they do have a serious channel now, or they're getting one.
Yeah.
So that's sort of progress.
We'll see if our buddy Ted Miller gets involved. I haven't reached out to him yet. I told him, like, I tweeted out, like, man, we should get the Podcast of Champions should be,
That's right. I would think, I would put you guys on. I'd also, and I don't care what our guys on the P say, I'd give Bill Walton a couple hours a day.
Yeah, he'd be fun.
I would. He's out there, and he's fun. He's interesting. And he's got so much to talk about, it might be better sometimes to put him on just by himself and not in the context of a basketball game. But really, there are some things you could do, I think, in the Pac-12 if you only would do them.
Yeah.
And I'm saying that for USC also. I mean, the stuff we sometimes say about the Pac-12, you could kind of write in, yeah, and USC too.
Yeah.
Because we haven't seen that kind of outside the box thinking and innovation and trying to lead the pack and break away maybe from the pack and do all the things that USC really should be doing. If you're USC with that history and where this school is now and in Los Angeles and in the media, you know, capital of the world in a lot of ways, and in California with all the Silicon Valley stuff that's going on, if you don't take advantage of that, you can't just sit in your office and say, hey, we're doing great. No, you ought to do that. You need to be doing better.
All right. Well, Dan Weber, doing a great job as always. Thanks so much for jumping on and answering all the questions. And again, I apologize for my my voice still a little under the weather, but we wanted to get you guys out this podcast. I'm going to have an Ohio State preview one coming up as well, and we'll see if we can do a recruiting one. I don't know if I'll be able to do it, but I'll see if Gerard and maybe Keeley or something will put a recruiting podcast together for you guys. But thanks, Dan, again, and everyone else, thanks so much. Yeah, thanks for tuning in, and we will talk to you next time.
You may have noticed that shopping at Trader Joe's is unlike shopping at other markets. People ask us all the time how we manage to have such unique, interesting and delicious products at such great everyday prices. This is Dan Bain of Trader Joe's. The answer is simple. It's all in the way we do business. We buy directly from the manufacturer whenever possible. This helps to keep our costs low, and we pass those savings on to you. No gimmicks, just great values at honest prices every day at Trader Joe's. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. Don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.